Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find therein, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Before we get started, it's time for patron thanks. These are the people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And in exchange, they get access to new bonus content, including, at some levels, our sibling show, Patron Deities, about the Deities and Demigods supplement. This episode, let's thank Roger Duthie. Thank you, Roger. In the last episode, we talked about some L monsters, including the Lucrata, the Lich, and the Lion. So let's get cracking with another set of L monsters. Our first entry is the humble lizard. Or not so humble, really, because here we have, in fact, like, not just regular old lizards, and not regular old lizards at all, but various type of fantasy lizardy creatures, including the fire-breathing fire lizard, the giant lizard, the minotaur lizard, and the subterranean lizard. I don't know if these come from any particular source. Is the minotaur lizard a joke on monitor lizard? It's kind of a proliferation of giant reptiles, right? Like, so don't know in what world we have a space for a giant lizard that is not either a dinosaur or a giant crocodile, which already exist, and a fire-breathing giant lizard, which is not a dragon. I guess it's kind of an entry-level dragon. It doesn't fly or anything. I say entry-level, it's still got 10 hit dice. So it's actually pretty buff. I don't know. They're lizards. They're giant lizards. They're fine. You know, you want to fight the kind of thing that might live in a swamp or cave, but that's still going to give you a little more of a ruckus than just a regular crocodile or bear. It's fine. It's a lizard. It's pretty cool. These are, you know, quite powerful natural hazard monsters, right? The giant lizard, the best, is the weakest of the bunch, and it's still got 3 hit dice, you know. And the Minotaur lizard is real strong and can gobble you up and, you know, 1 to 8 of them appear. So definitely the kind of area where, you know, you talk to the local villagers and they say, oh, don't go in there, the Minotaur lizard prowls that swamp and he'll gobble you up. And, you know, that's the explanation for why they haven't already gone in there and taken all the treasure out of the ruined wizard's manse. Lizards. You know, good environmental hazard monster. Largely because we already have feelings about lizards, right? The crocodiles and other reptilian predators are frightening to us in a way that is different from the way that wolves and lions are. Speaking of lizards, our next entry is the Lizard Man. Now, this is a creature that has its roots very much in kind of pulp fantasy and science fiction, rather than in anything of sort of mythology and folklore. There are various snaky and otherwise reptilian folkloric monsters, but the idea of a tribe of creatures who are all kind of lizard men is much more of a later fantasy fiction trope. I don't know that there's any one particular story that we can point to as progenitors for these guys. They make a certain amount of sense because they're definitely a kind of monster that would be the minions of a more powerful, suitably reptilian-themed creature. And whereas we think of snake men as being kind of devious, you know, if I said, oh, he's a snake man, or better yet, serpent man, you'd think he was likely to be like a wizard or an assassin or something like that. Whereas a lizard man just kind of seems like a brute. Lizard men are definitely the kind of thing that you can imagine He-Man fighting. Not that there was He-Man when this book came out, but you know what I mean. So yeah, lizard men, they're pretty great. I mean, they're basically just another entry in the catalog of relatively low HD, 2 arms, 2 legs and a head, shields and spears, live in huts, family of monsters, along with bugbears and gnolls and kobolds and hobgoblins and orcs and whatever, but their lizardy thing makes them a little bit different. I do like that they are just divided into 2 groups. You got your primitive lizard men, and you got your more civilized lizard men who have, you know, tools and things. And those ones maybe you could talk with, and you know, they're given as intelligence average, that's to say they're about as intelligent as a person, whereas the other lizard men are intelligence low. And I like the idea, although it's contradicted by this entry, but it seems to me to make more sense if the lizard men are devolving. right? I mean, maybe that's just because we associate lizard people with dinosaurs, so we think of them as something that would happen a long time ago. And that's very much kind of the serpent men from Call of Cthulhu, right? Is that they were once this wonderful civilization, and they've kind of devolved. So these primitive lizard men are the last pathetic remnants of a once great lizard man civilization, and here and there a few tribes cling on to some of their old ways. I feel like that's a better read on the lizard man, even though it's also a bit of a cliche in itself. No, I like lizard men. Lizard men are pretty good. Next, we have the Lokatha. I hate to confess a bias, but my heart sinks every time I come to one of these Blackmoor monsters. You know, the Lokatha first appeared in the Blackmoor supplement, and it's a very Blackmoorian monster, by which I mean that it doesn't have a folkloric or even necessarily literary predecessor. When I think of a monster that is typical of Blackmoor, I tend to think of something that's A, aquatic, and B, made up out of the whole cloth, like the Ishichachitl. But the Lokatha is just kind of a fish man. They ride around on giant eels. I guess that's kind of cool. And they, you know, they're got fins. They're sort of the creature from the Black Lagoon. Only without any of the narrative context of the creature from the Black Lagoon. They're just like, if you're having an aquatic campaign, they're in there to, you know, be the intelligent, organized opposition, as are various kinds of mermen and tritons and whatever. So you're not just fighting sea monsters and giant sharks and whatever all the time. So they're basically like, what if the deep ones from the Cthulhu mythos were kind of boring? You know, they don't have a hook. I did not intend that as a fish pun. So let's give them one. I mean, if the Lokatha are kind of bland, that just means that they're a blank canvas upon which we can add something that makes them a little more interesting to use in our games, right? I mean, in theory, you might treat them as no different from any, you know, random tribe or village of humans that your player characters might encounter. If you just came up with some boring old fantasy village, and then your players are bored with it, you wouldn't say, well, hey, humans are just no fun. You know, so it's just that there's space for us to add whatever it is. So the place where the Lokatha live is described as a castle-like undersea rock, which they have hollowed out into rooms and passages. So that's kind of cool, the idea that they've taken, like, the base of an island and they've hollowed it out with tunnels and made it into their castle. That's sort of neat. You know, what if the island on which something you were looking for was actually the, if they had tunneled into the base of the volcano a little bit, so they had a volcano base, that would be kind of neat. And then you could approach it from the landward side, assuming you could get past the reefs and the swarms of giant eel-riding Lokatha cavalry. And, you know, what if a lot of, what if it's like, imagine how people used to think about sort of like Davy Jones's locker, right? So this place where all the riches and wealth of sunken ships go. You know, these are pretty coastal guys. It says they roam shallow waters, hunting and gathering in the warm waters. So, they're a culture of fishing people. But shallow waters tend to be where ships get wrecked, right? Where they run aground. But so shallow waters are good because that's also where your characters are likely to be operating, right? They're not going to sail out into the middle of the deep sea and go fight deep sea monsters, because how would they even get down there other than like in the apparatus of Quailish? Or with relevant spells, I suppose, but that's boring. No, instead we have these guys who are off the coast of this island, and they've got their little, you know, volcano-based castle, and they're just gathering all the treasure and stuff out of, you know, wrecked ships, and maybe there's something you need in there, or maybe they're just starting to trade with the local humans, like they come up with sinister gold, and people aren't happy about it, but what can they do? And they're using it to buy things that they can't make themselves from the people, but, you know, there's all kinds of tension and potential for violence there. Or maybe they found something in one of these wrecked ships that's, like, stirring them up, right? So, you know, ships start to disappear and, you know, boats are getting attacked and people are going, well, it can't be the Lokatha, that we've always coexisted peacefully with them. But right, but it's because in the sunken ship they found some evil thing that their king has taken and it's turned them all devilish. But anyway, I guess what I mean is that the Lokatha are bland, but that's not because there is information provided about them that is boring. It's just that there's no real information provided about them. So we just have to make it. And certainly the idea of getting encircled by a bunch of this weird fish guy eel cavalry is definitely a sufficiently bizarre and appealing kind of visual image that I'd want to put in a little bit of work to make it fun in its context. Finally, we have the Lurker Above. Now, I thought that I hate the Lurker Above, because in general, the more obviously something is designed as a dungeon trap, the less it appeals to me. See the gas spore, for example. And the lurker above as a section of, you know, 20 by 20 foot dungeon ceiling that falls down on you and starts smothering you, and ha ha, what a sucker, you didn't prod every square inch of the ceiling with your 10 foot pole, can go right to bed. I know it makes me not old school, but I am not interested in running Whimsical Tramp Simulator 2000. Not my kind of game. But the lurker above as a sort of gas-filled manta ray creature that flaps slowly along the ceilings of caverns, and which has a tummy that is, you know, kind of rough and stone-like in order to act as a form of camouflage, and then drops down on its prey and, you know, gobbles them up. Yeah, okay, I can accept that. That's a cool piece of wildlife. And I will double accept that if areas where they feed, you see, you know, the bones of hapless cave animals that they have fallen on and devoured. This is kind of like a sort of manta ray Venus flytrap thing. So I actually like its description here with, again, its kind of weird ecology. It's a bit of a science fiction monster. One that is evolved to exist in the kind of world that has a lot of underground tunnel complexes. But again, I think there are ways to make that interesting, right? There are a lot of D&D campaign structures in which the presence of some kind of large-scale tunnel underworld, you know, is actually part of the setting. And overall, I approve of those. So I did not expect to say that the lurker above is actually a lot of fun. But on balance, I think I'm in favor of them. You don't want to overdo it. You certainly don't want to get into the kind of game where people are constantly checking to see if there are lurkers above lurking above them. Because, at least to me, that's not very exciting. And if that makes me not old school, then so be it. I am comfortable with that label. All right. Now, next time, we're doing a one monster special. Because next time, well, maybe two. Maybe two. Because our next monster entry is Lycanthropes. And there's a lot to cover in that entry. And if we can tack the Lynx, comma, Giant onto the end of it, well, then we can. So join me next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thanks for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.